Our Honest Life is a minimally edited, slice-of-life podcast that may contain vulgar language, adult themes, and sexually graphic content. Thanks for listening.
I'd have to know what a splort was before I could presume its intention.
I don't know, isn't that the thing that just comes out of you? Liquid comes out of you, and it splorts.
And it splorts? I can splort on purpose.
I don't think it's on purpose.
No, I can intentionally splort.
No, I think splort is unintentional.
Oh, kind of how, like, nude means you're not wearing any clothing, but naked feels like it was more of a surprise.
Yeah, just hanging out nude, whereas, oh shit, I woke up in a tree naked.
I was unexpectedly nude. Nobody says that.
No.
Well, I mean, I said it, so somebody said it in the history of the world.
The history of the world.
Yeah.
According to Our Honest Life.
Yes.
Yeah, welcome to the best damn podcast you're listening to right now, unless you're listening to two podcasts, in which case it is no longer the best damn podcast. We're runner-up to the concurrent podcast listening category.
We're a pretty stiff competitor for whatever you're listening to.
I'm Church.
I'm Mercy.
And if you had a time machine, where would you go?
I would go and hang out in the 80s, mid-80s. I think 1986 would be a good year. And I would just hang out at malls. And I'd play in arcades, and I'd watch movies, and I'd eat in the food court.
Why eat in the food court? Why is that a draw? What are you eating?
Well,
I was with you up until eating the food court.
Like chains.
I was like, yeah, that's why I want to go to
chain restaurants that don't exist anymore.
Like what? I'm trying to think. What's no longer here that we used to eat all the time?
I'm thinking of the mall that I used to go to when I was a kid in the 80s. Well, early 90s, late 80s. And they had, like, the first Chinese food place that I ever ate at. And I think it was like Sizzling Wok or something ridiculous. And it was the first time I ate at Taco Bell. Everything just tasted so much better then. Maybe that was because I was a kid.
Well, you're also probably experiencing things for the first time. So it's exciting new tastes and sensations. And now you're there and you're like eating the same damn taco I've had 100 times before in the same damn food court. Just old and depressed.
No, I think that would be amazing to be back at that point. I think it would be a very comforting, nostalgic experience.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'd go to the 80s, for sure. Like, if I'm visiting recent history, like, within my own timeline, where would I go? Yeah, somewhere in the 80s, probably the early 90s, too.
There was a bookstore slash toy store in the mall that I used to hang out at. They used to have those big roll of tiger stickers.
Oh, see, yeah, you just convinced me that 80s is the right place to go, because I would go back and I would just buy all the old toys I don't have now that I want.
Oh, for sure. Every time I got a vaccination.
Yeah. Are you getting vaccinated over there? What?
When I was a kid, every time I got a needle or a vaccination, my mom would take me to a little discount store near our neighborhood, and she would buy me a She-Ra figure.
Princess of power. All the power.
So much power. Is there an Archduke of power?
Archduke of power.
Like, if there's a princess, is there some sort of royal hierarchy?
Like, they all have, like, of power?
Yes. Where it's exactly like colonial Britain, or, like, Britain with their royal hierarchy.
Oh, I don't know about that. Like, there's the Duke of Earl, but I don't think there's the King of Earl. And there isn't the Prince of Earl.
Maybe there was at one point.
I don't know. I think, you know, Earl's just an area, and you get to oversee it for the king. And you're his duke, so you're the Duke of Earl.
Duke of Earl.
Sure.
Earl.
So Princess of Power, you'd be like, I don't know, what's part of power? Money. So you could be the Duchess of Money. You gotta have the money for She-Ra, your Princess of Power. And I'd be like, what's worse than a Duke? Baron, maybe?
Baron.
I'd be
Baron von Munchausen.
I'd be the Baron of Bitches, because you gotta have the bitches to have the power.
And then you get the sugar?
In America, first you get the sugar.
Then you get the Prince of Sugar. The money. Then you get the women.
To the left, we have the Prince of Darkness. To the right is Prince of Sugar. I'm going to go hang out with the Prince of Sugar.
Yeah.
A little bit cooler than the Prince of Darkness. Yeah, if I had a time machine, I keep thinking I'd go to the future, because I like to imagine the future is cool, circa, like, Back to the Future 2.
It's the good future.
Yeah, like flying cars and like funny ads and weird new movies that I want to see. I just don't want to wait for movies to come out. I want to see the 15th part of the Avengers now. So I'm going to go do it. But I'm also worried that what if I went to the future and like it was all toxic gas and everything was awful and you just died. Just some sort of horrible apocalypse future. Or they also figured out time travel and they're just waiting for you to show up because they know everything and they're going to arrest you on the spot.
Psycops.
Or steal your time machine.
I could not handle knowing the future in any capacity. Like, part of me would really want to just be like, if it's good, tell me it's good. But, you know, if the robots that use humans for biofuel have taken over, I don't want to know about it. Let me live happily without thinking about that.
Like the day before a huge lottery, I'd just go one day into the future and get the lottery numbers and come back and play those. Like, I think that's like the most common thing most people would do with a time machine. Let's just assume everyone who's won the lottery has a time machine, and that's all they used it for.
Oh, what about those assholes that win it like 7 times?
Look, we're onto them now. We know they have a time machine, and fuck them, let's go get it.
Someone's at the back door. It's the time cops. I know.
I told you we shouldn't have won a 7th lottery, Mercy. Yeah.
Look, it's like potato chips. Once you start, you just can't stop.
I think I'd also like to try and like use a time machine to go solve mysteries. Not like I'm Doctor Who or anything, I'm not saying that, but like Jack the Ripper, huh? Let's go figure that one out.
Well, that would be neat. But think of how horrifically you could alter the course of human history if you started solving something.
Well, maybe just because I figured it out, I don't meddle with time, and instead I let those horrible things continue to happen because it would probably unravel my reality if I don't. But then I go back and I write this book like, hey, I figured it out.
What?
And I just have all the facts.
Do you think you could mentally handle the strain of knowing that horrific acts were going on that you could fully prevent? Could you handle that?
No, I have competing? To convince myself that, and I think I could do this pretty quickly, I think I'm already convinced of it, that those things already happened. You're just, basically, you have a window that you get to watch it. It's like some sort of, you know, virtual reality TV that you can interact with, but it's already happened.
You would have to do that, for sure. You would have to fully understand, or put your faith in, it has happened, so it will always happen, and it's always happened. I can't affect this. If I try, there will be instant and immediately negative repercussions. Like, you have to go in knowing that. That's what happens when you get a shitty sci-fi movie, when the Watcher goes back in time and he figures out a bunch of mysteries, but then he falls in love with one of the victims, and then Tom Cruise is the protagonist, and then, you know, some 17-year-old girl is the person he falls in love with.
How many times has Tom Cruise time traveled?
Tom Cruise is a flat circle. He is an immortal who has always existed on this earth.
No, I didn't mean really time travel. I just meant in his movies. How many times does he time travel?
Oh, thank you for clearing that up. I don't know. Is that something you can Google?
Well, probably, but it's more fun to talk about it and see what you can remember.
Siri, how many times does Tom Cruise time travel? She's not going to have an answer for us.
Why don't you just use the internet? No is the answer.
Nothing.
Give me a favorite villain or 12.
Or 12?
Well, I don't know. Just give me some favorite villains.
If I say the Sinister Six, does that count for 6 of them?
Do you like all 6 of the Sinister Six from Amazing Spider-Man? So Amazing Spider-Man, the original Sinister Six, is what? Doc Ock, Kraven.
I don't care for Kraven. Like, immediately off the hop.
I'm not a fan of Kraven. Electro.
Electro can be good.
Yeah, Sandman.
It's goofy as hell. I like Sandman.
Mysterio's and good. And the Vulture, I believe.
Yeah, because I think we have that Sinister Six box set, and I'm pretty sure the Vulture's in it, and he just looks like an old guy.
Yeah, I'm not completely convinced of that, because I remember the return of the Sinister Six, and the Vulture's new. Who else do they have? They have the Sandman, but they turn him to glass right away, which is kind of silly, because he's gone good now, and he doesn't want to be part of it, but they bring his glass statue to all their meetings.
And no one's like, I bet if we crushed the shit out of this thing, we could have Glassman.
Yeah, Kraven's dead at that point. So it's Mysterio, Hobgoblin, Glass Sandman, Doc Ock, the Vulture, and who am I missing?
The Rhino. Scorpion?
No. I like those guys, though. I like the Scorpion. Mm. I think the Scorpion has a great look.
The Shocker?
The Shocker. No, the Shocker's part of like the Fearsome Five or something. Wannabe version of the Sinister Six. So good. Led by the Beetle. Beetle's always trying to... he's always trying to look for his big score. Eventually he gives up and he becomes like a fake hero for a while in Thunderbolts. And then the Thunderbolts are all supervillains pretending to be heroes, and then the rest of them want to go legit, and Beetle's not down with it. No, or is Beetle down with it? Beetle is down with it, sorry. It's they're led by Baron Zemo at first, and Baron Zemo is not down with it. Yeah, so he becomes their, like, main enemy, even though he created them.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think Beetle takes over at that point. But the Scorpion's a much better villain. Anyways, who are some of your favorite villains? And no, I don't think the Sinister Six is part of your
Beetlejuice
tier of villains. Is Beetlejuice a villain? Yeah, I guess so.
Beetlejuice is definitely. Okay, I gotta write this down. I ain't gonna remember shit.
Why do you have to write Beetlejuice down?
Because I can't remember, and this will help me keep on track.
All right.
Okay, so I said Beetlejuice already, right?
Yeah, don't say it one more time, or we're in big trouble.
Beetle Blender. Beetle Breakfast. Beetle Drink. Beetle Orange. Orange Beetle.
Beetle Juicer.
Let me check.
Let me check. What are you checking?
My mental files. Do the zombies in the Living Dead trilogy count? Like the George Romero zombies?
Like all of them? Yes. I guess they're a villain.
Zombies?
Yeah, they're...
Are you talking just an antagonist, or do you mean, like, what's your favorite superhero villain?
No.
Do
you like Darth Vader? It doesn't have to be. There's other forms. Okay, let's narrow it down. Film. In a movie. Who is a villain that speaks to you? That stands the test of time and...
Huh.
Gets you excited. You quite believe they're capable of really awful things, but they're very intriguing.
Questions like this are difficult, because you ask them and then I immediately...
I'm going to help you out.
I immediately forget every single movie I have ever watched forever.
So, yes, just think of Hans movies you Gruber. Love. Die Hard. Why do you love Die Hard? Because you love the villain. I don't think it's Bruce Willis. I mean, Bruce Willis is fine.
No, I saw Bruce Willis when I was like a little kid when Die Hard came out. It's going to devolve for a second. I saw Bruce Willis walk across broken bulbs and like Christmas ornaments in his bare feet. In a white tank top, and he was, like, all sweaty and beat up. Maybe that's where that weird fetish comes from.
You know what that is? That was you seeing the future of you having children. That's what you have to navigate every morning or in the middle of the night when you need to get a cup of juice. That's what's on the floor, and that's what you're dressed up as, and you're all beat up from life.
Aw, man. Mine's all sexy, and yours, like, you horrible old hag. You step on shit in the night.
It was still sexy to me. Anyways.
Okay.
Anyways.
I like Mama from Dread.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a great villain to you?
What? No, you asked me who I like. You're not like, who's the best villain?
No, I said favorite.
Oh, favorite.
Well, favorite has to be a great one.
No, I still think she's awesome. But I mean, it's Lena Headey, so I just gotta watch whatever she's in, and I'll be like, maybe she'll take her top off. I could be lucky.
No, she never takes her top off, ever. Even in Game of Thrones, that was a body double. Sarah Connor Chronicles. Body double. It was a machine. Tom Cruise uses a machine called a computer to make himself look younger in movies, I learned recently.
I've learned that this is very common.
For Tom Cruise or for everyone?
For any male actor over the age of 35.
Really?
Pretty much.
Put the computer on me. So like Tony Stark is really like not as good looking as we've been led to believe.
Do you mean Robert Downey Jr.?
Well, in his portrayal of Tony Stark, he's just all... computer. I mean, they made him super young.
Yes, they did. So villains. I like her. She's got a good look, and I don't mind the backstory, but I'm sure there's things that I could pick apart or nitpick if I thought about it, but I just enjoy that for being a very basic story. That's all I want from it. That is all I'm asking. Like, I don't need no insight for a lot of stuff on this. It's just people getting shot in the face. It's still a beautiful movie, though. I love that movie.
Like, yeah, it's a fine movie. She's not a remarkable villain to me in any way. The most memorable thing about her to me, I can't remember her backstory, I can't remember how tragic it was, blah, blah, blah. The whole world's, you know, crap. So it's hard for me to get invested in why I should, you know, see her point of view or get it. The only thing I really remember is she's, a drug dealer. And she's on a lot of crazy, really nasty drugs.
Well, the story was that she was a prostitute, somebody was pimping her out, and they got her hooked on drugs. She was abused, and she murdered her pimp and, like, a bunch of other people, and she took over his gang, and she started, like, running drugs and prostitutes. So, I mean, it's basic enough for me. It works. I mean, I don't like the fact that it's one of those, like, it uses rape and sex work as a plot device for why somebody is, you know, this is just how they were bad.
Why a woman is bad? Like, a woman just can't be bad?
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, we don't have the personal growth.
It's they took shortcuts.
Yeah. Oh, well, she was raped and her mom was murdered in front of her, and they kicked her dog. And it's like, well, I understand. Her rage is justified.
Yeah, it's not a bad background. It's just, it's...
it's tropey.
Yeah, this is played out. Find another reason. Let's talk James Bond a little bit. What about, like, the second James Bond film, From Russia with Love? Dr. No's an interesting villain, a little bit. You know, he's part of Spectre, but... only in the second movie, From Russia with Love, do you actually see Spectre operating for the first time as a unit.
Dr. No was like the introduction.
Yeah, it
was
yeah, like, no, and it's fine.
They exist. I'm like, oh.
But From Russia with Love, you see that the organization is run by Number One. You don't know who Number One is at that point. Everyone just has a number. You know, they're all running mobs or, you know, have evil schemes to, you know, ransom the government and things like that.
It's just a worldwide crime syndicate.
Yeah. They want to retrieve, what is it, the Lecter machine or whatever, so it's the, you know, decoder's machine. But anyways, that aside, the guy they put on it is, like, a world-class chess champion, and that's what he does, like, as a job. And, or I guess he's a philanthropist as well, and he plays chess, but he's really high up with Inspector. So you have this genius chess player who's, like, plotting and scheming evil things. Like, I love that idea. It's great. He has a mundane but yet genius job. Maybe it's not even a mundane job. It doesn't look that exciting, but the mental powers that this guy has to have, he just excels at chess in the real world. It's like an early version of an anime villain or something almost.
They're just super smart. No, those are fantastic qualities, and definitely...
it shows why he's dangerous right off the top. I don't need to know his whole life story. I don't need to know why he chose to be bad. What I want to know is why I should fear him. And in showing how amazing he was at chess in an opening scene where suddenly he gets the call that he has to go, he stops toying with the other guy, just beats him, gets checkmate, gets up and leaves. And you're just like, oh, this guy's a genius. Watch out.
It goes back to that whole thing with why does somebody have to have a terrible backstory?
Darth Vader, before the prequels came out, all we knew about him from the original trilogy was he ended up being the hero's father, but he was a Jedi Knight and then was seduced by the Emperor to the dark side. That's all we really know. And then he helps hunt down and exterminate all the Jedi. And he's just a really bad guy. You don't understand. You know, we didn't need to hear the story about how he got raped and was a prostitute for a while.
He was a child slave, and he was abused by his slave masters.
Oh, right, that's
and
the real story.
He was passed about from cartel to cartel with his mother based on gambling matches with their slaves. Like, it's a shitty life.
Now that's pod racing. Or this is pod racing. What does he say? This is lame.
I'm a pilot.
My background story is awful. You shouldn't watch this. We should have never seen him as a child. It's pointless.
I never pictured Darth Vader as a child.
Everyone was a child, but Hitler was a child, but we don't see young Hitler ever. We don't care about young Hitler, because when you're a child, it's formative years, and that's not the person that we come to know. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant.
Well, people are
It should be irrelevant.
People are so malleable that you can't say, this is the defining moment, because it's like a multiverse. At any moment, you could make the opposite decision that you were going to make. You could just decide to walk away from everything or commit to everything.
So, when only the original trilogy of Star Wars existed, I would have easily put Darth Vader as my number one villain of all time. I loved Darth Vader, mainly because of the mystery. I kind of had a better idea, at least I think, in my head for who he was before he became Darth Vader, and he was just cooler, and just one day he just decided, yeah, I like the power, it's easier. And I don't care what I do to others. Didn't matter.
It fleshes out the character to have them make that decision and just... they just decided to be evil. Or they decided to make a bad choice.
They just listened to the evil space wizard. The Emperor just tells him, we will be so powerful together. And he's like, yeah?
Yeah.
You know, people have really come around a lot on Hayden Christensen now as Anakin. But it's still a miscast. It shouldn't have been him. I like Hayden Christensen, but...
I agree.
He's not right in that movie, that role. Something's off.
You well know my feelings on the prequels, which is that George Lucas had an amazing vision, much like he did for the original Star Wars trilogy, but he lacked the budget limitations. He needs the budget limitations to make things as shitty and handmade as possible. Like, shitty in the best handmade way, where it's artisanally shitty, and it just looks lived in and real. And
yeah, when you kind of give him... You need to be creative. You needed to really work it and be inventive to tell the story you wanted to tell. And instead, he didn't have to be anymore. He was very lazy. He brought a bunch of guys in who would show him 20 drawings of something he kind of mumbled at a table. Yeah, like, you know, cool looking alien. Like, you know, big eyes, like a bug. And make him, like, half a cyborg. Oh, okay, hold on. We'll be right back, George. And then these guys all run out, and there's, like, 50 of them hold up, like, 50 different versions of things. He's like, yeah, that 17th one. That's great. That's, yeah. Let's go with it.
The restraints that George Lucas had unintentionally on the original Star Wars trilogy helped refine it and make it amazing. People were forced to be creative. They were forced to work and invent new things. And they invented so many new technologies and ways of doing stuff for film just on those movies alone. Everyone had to be so innovative. And now no one is thinking of ways to make old scrap spaceships out of circuit board parts.
Yeah.
George Lucas is a really good example of somebody who does more with less, because he has a way of attracting people who are brilliantly creative. But then I think with the prequels, to go back to that, he has really good ideas, but they're generally very broad strokes and childish, and it's a beautiful childish fantasy.
I mean, we rag on George Lucas a lot, but if you could meet somebody alive or dead for an hour, anyone mm-hmm. you want, who would it be? And I'm like, hey, George Lucas is pretty high on my list. Might be George.
I did not have a huge interest in meeting George Lucas up until Celebration, when we saw him on stage and he was interacting with people, and he actually seemed like a nice guy who really wanted to create things, and he was uncomfortable with a lot of the fanfare and the pomp and the grandeur. And he was really a good sport about everything, but you can tell that that's not where he wants to be. He's
a quieter guy. He's kind of like a homebody, I think.
Yeah, and I think you get a really awkward picture of somebody when they don't really want to be up on stage, when you know that they're like, this is good, but I just really want to do my work.
So Darth Vader would have been at the top of my list for favorite villains, but then the prequels came out, and the prequels gave him too much of a backstory, and I sort of was like, oh, he's kind of a wiener. And he shouldn't be a wiener. I mean, maybe he stopped being a wiener at a certain point, he clearly did, but he was clearly a wiener for a very long time.
He was super wiener.
Yeah, I needed to see Anakin Skywalker marching the same way Darth Vader did, being, like, just so powerful with the Force, he was just throwing things aside, no problem, but with weight.
I wanted to see what he was doing
and just smashing things down with his lightsaber. Like you saw at the end of Rogue One. Yeah. He needed to be that before he became that. Star Wars needs to give us something new again. Not that I want to talk about Star Wars much anymore, but like the original ones like gave us lightsabers and gave us, you know, really cool looking spaceships and giant Sarlacc pits. We haven't seen anything in the new movies really that do the same thing. But because of the prequels, I would say the Emperor became one of my top villains in all of film. I don't know much about him other. You see him already established, already choosing to go for power and corrupting other people and creating these dark disciples. And he's a twisted evil space wizard. It's wonderful. Anyway, so I'd put the Emperor up there.
Yeah, you like the Sheev? The Sheev Palpatine?
Yeah, that's a great first name, isn't it? Sheev?
Sheev.
It's like you're trying to say shave, but you just kind of slurred it up.
We're like Collider.
Went for a sheave.
We just say sheave all the time. Anytime somebody talks about the Emperor, they all mumble sheave, sheave Palpatine.
Other great villains in film.
Oh, in film. Okay, what movies do I like?
David Lopan from Big Trouble in Little China. Oh,
David Lopan is awesome.
I don't know if he's a great villain.
Ursula the Sea Witch from The Little Mermaid. And Scar?
I guess. I don't remember Scar. Scar just takes over. He's menacing.
He's a very posh villain, which is something I...
Scar doesn't do anything for me.
Well, you're not a furry.
I am not, no.
Who did his voice? Jeremy Irons?
I don't know. Shia LaBeouf.
No.
Why not? It must have been at least three.
He took a time machine back.
That's what he did with his time. Went and put himself into the Lion King.
Who else? Skeletor.
That's from the Masters of the Universe movie?
Yes.
Because it said film. Yeah, that's actually Frank Langella really... is the best part of that entire movie, hands down. There's no room for debate on that.
He's good.
I'm trying to think. I always liked the MCP as a villain from Tron.
MCP is good.
I like the idea of computer that becomes self-aware and is trying to gobble up more and more systems, and it knows what it's doing, and it's working with the humans and, like, blackmailing them to keep doing things for it in the real world while inside, like, its own computer world. It's having to wage this war, then nothing can really stop it.
It really puts it into perspective how technologically advanced the Tron world actually is, because you don't see the world. You just see the technology. But you know what? Dillinger is not at all freaked out that the MCP is basically an autonomous AI.
It's the best.
He just doesn't care.
Whoever's listening to this podcast right now, they're like, what the fuck is a Dillinger? MCP. Nobody saw Tron. All right. Let's move off of Tron.
So many people saw Tron.
Yeah, like, but nobody.
But nobody. But yes, but nobody.
Is Jason a great villain from, like, the Friday the 13th movies?
I like Jason. Jason is good because Jason is not just a person. He's a concept. He is an entity, and many different people are Jason, and Jason is many different people.
No, he's just a unkillable zombie in a hockey mask with a machete.
Hey, screw you. I was going deep.
Yeah, but that's bullshit. That's just weird stuff you've applied to an unkillable zombie with a machete in a goalie mask.
You're like, this is not philosophy.
From the early 80s. Hey, there's not much to it beyond that, but that works for some people. It's got an iconic look, and it's a relentless darkness that you can't stop. There is something to it there. I mean, Freddy has a bit of that, too. Freddy has more personality. Nightmare on Elm Street. I don't know, something about Freddy still seems like a wiener.
Oh, Pinhead.
Pinhead is not necessarily a villain.
No.
From the Hellraiser films, he's angel to some, demon to others.
The Lament configuration, that's what the puzzle box is called.
Opens a place to another dimension, heaven to some, hell for others. It would be hell for me. I mean, they pull you apart, and they remake you, and you can't die.
The Chatterer.
That's another Cenobite.
I know, but I love the Chatterer, because he makes the teeth noises.
Imagine that guy going down on you.
Ow. Ow. Remember that time I bit your butt really hard?
Oh, yeah, that hurt a lot.
I leaned over, and I was putting my lips on Church's butt, and I had, like, a muscle seize, and my jaw just clamped down super hard right on the medius part of his ass.
My meaty ass. That's not a good way to describe a man ass, is it? Meaty? What about books?
I like books.
No, any great villains in books?
I don't know. I'm looking at the books that we have on the shelf.
Oh, look, there's Stephen King's It. Anyways, when I read that book, I'll let you know if I think he was a good villain or not.
I read the book so long ago. From the 80s. Damn it. I have totally, like, I don't know, the house from House of Leaves. Does that count as a villain?
I don't know. I only ever managed to read, like, the first part of that book.
Originally, I found this article online. It was a guide on how to read House of Leaves, the special edition that I have, because I'm a nerd. And it's got the color writing and the different fonts, and it's like a piece of art. But there was a guide that was how to read it in almost like a linear style. And years later, I tried to find that for some people, and I can't find it, and it never existed. But it did, because I read it.
Oh, maybe it didn't exist. Maybe you just, you know, went through one of those doors. So...
Oh, shit, I crashed into a multiverse.
I'll go really nerdy on you. Lord Soth.
Ooh.
From the Dragonlance novels is pretty good villain. I like him a lot, but I like him a lot when he gets transported to Ravenloft and they release a Ravenloft book called Knight of the Black Rose, and it's just him getting stuck in this hell dimension of darkness and how he gets his own realm in there. So that's really nerdy, if you want to talk nerdy. But I think if you want to still talk Dragonlance, is Raistlin? Raistlin? I don't know.
Raistlin.
Yeah, you know, golden-skinned, Raistlin. Hourglass, pupil-eyed magician. Ooh,
yeah, Raistlin's so hot.
Staff of the Magi.
With his debilitating curse.
He's a pretty good literary villain. I'd put him way up there. You couldn't finish reading all his books because you kept getting too hot and bothered. You were like, horny. I can't read this.
It was hard.
It was weird.
You were like, I don't understand what is wrong with this girl. I named off all the Transformers and she took off her panties and threw them at me.
The vampire Lestat in the first interview with the vampire is a really good villain.
I don't tend to remember villains. Why?
It's because you can relate to villains a lot easier in books. They don't stand out as villains as easily. you think the other misunderstood, or because you can kind of understand them a bit better.
I have villain sense, so anytime we're watching a movie and there's somebody that I'm like, oh god, that person is so hot, 100% of the time they are the villain. Even if they're undercover or they're pretending that they're not the villain, I'm always like, that guy's evil.
No, it's that thing we figured out, like, you know, 15 years ago. The villain is always the guest star.
The Law and Order trope.
It was like, you know, any famous actor of yesteryear, the blonde guy from Chips, you know, oh, he's the villain because he's the only slight name on the show.
Yeah, but it was always terrible because you knew if you saw, like, John Ritter's name, you knew that he had, like, raped and strangled his next-door neighbor. Like, it was always him.
So we should point something out about Mercy. When she says the hot guy, she has a skewed version of what the hot guy looks like. Mercy is naturally attracted to scoundrels, tricksters. Yes,
like sinister looking.
A little bit more weaselly, the better.
I'm going to post a picture when I put this up of the villain from Paul Blart Mall Cop. As soon as I saw him, I was like, that guy is so hot. And he's pretending to be just a trainee guard. And I'm like, oh, he's really cute. And then immediately it's like, oh, and he's the bad guy.
Like, I know a lot of people don't think Adam Driver as Kylo Ren is very attractive, but you're like, he's so attractive.
He's just tall and gangly. He's gangly as a motherfucker. No, and he's just evil looking.
I'll give it to him.
He just looks like he'd have a lot of pent-up sexual frustration.
So, you're projecting. So, yes. So, in our role-playing games, is there a favorite villain that stands out, or a memorable villain?
Your villains stand out more because I interact with them, and I'm also usually attracted to them, but I just can't figure them out, and it's just maddening. There was a dragon, and I think he had white hair with, like, tips with some color on them.
Oh, yeah, he had...
Pink or blue? He might have been a blue dragon.
Yeah, he had blue hair with, like, slightly pink tips. Yeah. The end or something like that.
It was something super...
And he was like the...
Super femmy.
Advisor to the king. And he was controlling everybody.
Yeah.
And everything. I named that dragon off of one of the worst bosses I had ever had at that point. I didn't directly report to him, but I worked at a place where he was one of the leads of, like, the team that worked in conjunction with mine. And he was just horrible, horrible person, just like a stickler for rules, just because rules existed, and just enforced everything and loudly, and was always, he was suspicious of everything for no reason, just always suspicious. He was a really mean, nasty guy, and like, you can be suspicious of everything, but you could still be nice. He wasn't, so he became a villain in D&D. Big nasty dragon. In reality, he was a small man.
There was another villain where I was a nurse, or I was working in a care home. It was some weird town. But there was a guy there, and it was like a weird mental hospital.
The guy was a weird mental hospital?
No, he was in a weird mental hospital, and he was just staring into space, and he had never talked to anyone.
He was nonverbal, and
He just sat there.
Yep.
I got so stumped in that game, and I had no idea what to do. And I never know what to do in open world situations.
Oh, it's nothing. You're just supposed to keep trying things. I like to think of the games I run where, especially with a single player, well, one-on-one games. Yeah, it's just like one of those weird puzzle box games. You just keep trying different things, and slowly but surely you find the right sort of combination, and it works. So you just keep trying different things, and you just try to have fun. It's meant to be.
I guess I always assume...
You just play too conservative.
Yeah, because I always assume that if I make the wrong choice, the game just ends.
Nah.
And then I get decision paralysis. There's so many damn options.
No, those games usually aren't designed to kill the characters. I mean, they're meant to be interactive. Interactive stories. That was a cat just kicking a controller off of the couch. That fat cat is going to fall off the couch.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite scary story?
Yes. I slept over at my friend's house, and she was telling me ghost stories about her house. She lived directly across the street from a cemetery. So we went to sleep, and all of a sudden, underneath our beds, something started running around. So we'd hear a thump, and then we'd hear a skitter. You could sense it moving through the beds, and we just freaked out.
That's your favorite scary story? That's not a scary story. That was a thing that happened to you.
Oh.
That scared you.
Oh, do you mean like, oh, I like the legend of the Baba Yaga.
That's scary? That's your favorite scary story?
No.
The legend of the Baba, you want to sit down and read that and be like, ooh.
Hey, I read the Baba Yaga a lot as a kid. On a chicken leg house in the forest. And you get like the mirror and the comb and the cup. And you gotta run away from her, and you gotta like plant the comb, and then trees spring up. And then you gotta plant the mirror, and then it's like it becomes a lake, and then you gotta like put the cup down, and it's like it's a valley or something. I don't know.
Wow.
for something I didn't know about, I sure talked for an awful long time.
Ooh, yeah, okay. So, speaking of scary things then, we recently watched the movie Lights Out. What did you think of it?
It subverted a lot of my expectations, to use a phrase that you...
So what was it about? If you were to describe it in a sentence or two, what is it?
It is unknown entity terrorizes family.
No, it was very known. Mm. It wasn't unknown at all. Everybody knew who it was.
So it's the...
And that's sort of, as the viewer, you don't realize that right away. That's one of the neat tricks I think it did, was that it very quickly, instead of just being like, oh, there's a horrible thing and it's just going to kill you, it actually was linked to this family and they all knew about it and had been trying to live with it.
You still don't know what it is. Like, what kind of creature is it? That's more what I'm talking about. Yeah, yes, it does have a backstory, but it's not Freddy or Jason where it's, these were this person. This is like, we don't know where she came from. She had weird powers. We shone a light on her and she disappeared.
Well, she had a father, but he said, like, she can get in my head. They had been living hidden away or something. And she hated sunlight. And she had very sensitive skin. And they tried a experimental procedure
light
with
therapy.
Her. Which was, I think they just surrendered her really bright light. And she, like, vanished, vaporized.
Yeah.
And she became this, like, creature of darkness that can only appear when there's no light. She's linked to this other woman, and the other woman has a couple kids.
It was the psychic link part that, for me, kind of breaks it down, where I'm like, so she's psychically linked, but she only comes out when this woman is in times of severe psychological duress. So does that mean this is just a latent psychokinetic ability that's coming out? Is she a mutant? Is the mom in that movie a mutant? She's just projecting psychokinetic energy and causing reality to shift.
I guess. There was a really creepy scene after you realize that the mother is very aware of the thing and has been living with it, like talking to it and interacting with it for a really long time. Her daughter's talking to her and just the mother's in her bedroom, like at the doorway with the door open. And all of a sudden, like the back of her skirt gets pulled back into the room and she's like, I have to go now, as the thing is pulling the mother back in the room to be with her, and she quickly hands her something, and it was a little rolled up piece of paper, and it was like, I need help or something like that. Yeah. Is what it said. It was really creepy and really well done. I wish there was a bit more of that, but all in all, I would say I like that movie way more than I thought I would. I thought it was going to be only okay, and it was like, nope, for a horror, this is a bit different. This is worth checking out.
I agree. I think there were some parts of it that I didn't care for on like a personal level, where I was like, I don't like the characterization of the relationship between this woman and her boyfriend. It seemed a little weird. He seemed a little bit oddly possessive, and it kind of turned me off, their whole vibe.
Yeah, they were...
But then the rest of the movie was fantastic.
Some of the characterizations, the older daughter and, yeah, her boyfriend are kind of off.
He gets super possessive and weird.
Oh, he's
about
a bit of a weirdo.
About, like...
But she's a bit of a weirdo. It was like, I can't get it.
They were mutually weird. So, I mean, I guess in movie fantasy world, that is fine. And there's no repercussions and everyone's happy. There's no negativity. You just take it at face value.
I think it was kind of okay in that they weren't perfect. They were kind of selling there's a totally real world outside of here. And there's just some not normal stuff going on. Overall, though, I'd say, yeah, it's worth checking out. It's not a great film.
It has Maria Bello in it.
But it's doing something a little bit different with horror. That weird, creepy dark monster, and I think it's worth checking out.
There's some really obvious horror movie tropes that kind of that happen for cheap tension, where everyone is always splitting up and they're always leaving the kid alone, and
there's a couple
no one's taking the threat seriously.
They played with that a bit, though.
Or as serious as you as you wish.
They were a little aware of it.
They were, and I guess it's really just when you come into the movie seeing it and you know clearly this thing is dangerous, but everyone's still kind of not believing that it's happening, where they're just like, maybe it is, you know, it'll just go away. Sometimes it throws me off as a viewer because I clearly know that it's a dangerous entity and they are not running and doing the logical thing.
Let's go back to James Bond. Maybe we'll end on this. What's your favorite Bond opening? I guess there's two ways we can talk about this. What's your favorite opening scene? Because James Bond always has the cold open, right? It's just you're right into the movie partway through something, and something's going to happen.
James is finishing up his last assignment.
Sometimes, or sometimes it leads into the current film. But Or, so we can answer that, but then also, follow up to that, what's your favorite Bond opening sequence and the visuals? Not just the song. I mean, we could talk your favorite song too, but let's start favorite cold opening first.
So the favorite cold opening is Felix Leiter is getting married. It's the helicopter scene at the beginning of...
License to Kill?
Yeah, the beginning of License to Kill.
Sing us a line of License to Kill.
Got a license to kill. But I think that is one of the best ones.
Yeah, why? What does that one work for you?
It's so ridiculous, but it's still grounded enough.
Well, what's ridiculous about it?
So it's ridiculous because James Bond and Felix Leiter are involved in this very lighthearted, normal, everyday scene with kind of the wedding, and they're happy. It's a very personalizing, candid shot. They're enjoying each other's company and they have friends, and you can sense that there's friendship because they're not hanging out in work, and this is an intimate gathering, and they enjoy each other's company, and everyone very very much knows each other. And then they get the call that they gotta go and they gotta do their job, and it's just like going into the office, but their office is they gotta run to a helicopter, and they're wearing silver tuxedos and top hats and canes and shit, and it's absurd because they go and they do their job. And then they're right back in to their kind of real life, everyday, mundane shit.
There's a level of cheese to that. I mean, there's a level of cheese to a lot of Bond.
But it's realistic cheese. It's not Pierce Brosnan water skiing on like an explosion or something. Like wakeboarding. It's not Pierce Brosnan wakeboarding cheese.
Right, it's homey. So I think my favorite? So it's Roger Moore opening. They no longer had the rights to Spectre and Blofeld, so they just have...
For Your Eyes Only?
Yeah, it's the opening to For Your Eyes Only, where it's Blofeld, but they never say it is, and you only ever see him from behind, and he's in a wheelchair controlling a helicopter that James Bond got into.
And it starts off with James Bond in a graveyard, and some guy, the groundskeeper or whatever, is like, gives him a message?
I don't know, whatever.
And then he gets into the helicopter, and like the helicopter pilot dies or something.
Well,
he is murdered by
Blofeld kills him with the remote control, and then takes over the helicopter, and he's toying with Bond, and of course Bond figures out where the control is, smashes it, takes over the helicopter, figures out where Blofeld is, and then uses the leg of the helicopter to scoop up Blofeld's on his wheelchair, and then he flies up into the air with him and drops him into a giant smokestack. And as Blofeld falls down, he yells, "Mr. Bond!" It's ridiculous.
It was a joke.
And then the movie's intro music starts. Yeah, I like that one. I don't know. I also like the start of Diamonds Are Forever, because Bond's just like in full-on murder mode, hunting down Blofeld and shoots him, thinks he kills him and his duplicates in the mud.
Oh, yeah,
that's... It's a very sort of violent... I mean, it's kind of schlocky now, but at the time, you could tell that was meant to be, like, stone cold.
It's like, oh, that guy had plastic surgery for, like, 18 months to look like Blofeld, and then James Bond just straight up murders him.
Oh, Blofeld's in Drag in that movie later on and everything. Oh, man, it's just such a weird film. It's great to watch, but it is not a good Bond film. I don't know. Highly entertaining, not a great movie. Yeah, if that makes sense. For modern openings, Casino Royale is interesting, where he earns his 00 status by murdering two men.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird, because he's like, you're not a 00, like, I don't know why or how this person would know that, and he's like, well, I will be when I shoot you, and then...
Well, I thought that guy was also another MI6 agent, and Bond had figured out that he was, like, double-crossing people.
Is that what it is? I've never really understood it. It's just I know he's on a mission and he kills two people and he achieves 00 status. But it's a nice sort of black and white intro, isn't it? Yeah. That one was always good.
Daniel Craig running out of the surf in Tiny Blue Gaunch is also good.
Well, that's just a good part. I mean, Casino Royale also has that really good parkour chase scene up that
crane, I think, and everything. Casino Royale was like so exciting.
Yeah, it was just a new type of Bond. And
all this free running.
Yeah, it was good. And then you get Spectre and... He's just can't do crap in it anymore. He just shoots people without even trying. There's no effort to it anymore. All right, so favorite music number, like including just the visuals.
For the beginning? Yeah. I love Casino Royale.
You like the cards?
I love the cards, and I love the song.
It's yeah, Chris Cornell song was always good. A lot of people don't like that song, though. I bet they'll change their tune on it now that he's passed. That usually seems to happen.
They're like, I was one of the first people to say it was great.
Yeah.
Like, no. Everyone was like,
put it down, and we were always like, no, it's pretty good. Because yeah. You liked it so much, we went and got the song right away after that.
I definitely have listened to that song on repeat multiple times. Skyfall is also good. I like Skyfall.
Yeah, Skyfall had a good intro. I'm trying to think back to the original ones. Dr. No has a horrible one. It's was it the three blind guys walking around tapping their sticks or whatever?
And yeah.
It's very
some of them
simplistic 60s style. I like any of the ones that have a naked woman bounce up from below. Clearly she just jumped off a trampoline and you can see through her to some it's just her silhouette and her silhouette. You can see through, and Bond is usually running and turning or pointing his gun at you. Anyone in any intro that has that in it.
it's definitely a big staple of the original Bond openings.
God, Goldeneye has the weirdest opening. Doesn't the woman's mouth open up and the revolver comes out of her mouth?
The
barrel of the gun.
There was a lot of women that were doing flips around barrels.
And they're they've got hammers, and aren't they hammering the Russian sickles and stuff?
And then I think at some heels. Point, they're wearing the hats.
All right, so Goldeneye clearly is the best intro of them all. Well, so Casino Royale is your favorite intro.
I didn't understand so much of that movie. I had to watch it three times.
I have to pick one. I don't know. I like a lot of them. What's the worst James Bond film out there? Octopussy. I don't know.
What, so that? That's my little octopussy.
Oh, God. It's the weirdest line ever.
there's an island where only ladies go. Oh, shit. I gotta get there.
Octopussy's a stupid movie.
It's all ladies.
I don't know what's going on. So, favorite Bond song?
Oh, I like so many of the originals. I love Live and Let Die, but there's so many that are good.
I like Diamonds Are Forever. I'll always like that one.
My
mother used to sing it.
That is a very good song. You Only Live Twice is a really good song.
You Only Live... What's the song from that?
The song is You Only Live Twice. You only live twice.
Or so they say.
Or so it seems. One life for you and one for your dreams. You drift through the world and life seems tame, till one dream appears and love is its name.
Yeah, it's a good song. I always I guess, I don't know if it's a theme song, but it's one of the Bond songs, Louis Armstrong's All the Time in the World.
Yeah, that is a good song. I like The Man with the Golden Gun.
Isn't that considered one of the worst songs of all time?
I'm pretty sure it's the least popular. Who sings it? Tula?
Could be. I don't know.
Some woman named Tula.
See, we don't even know. We don't know. No, there ain't no Tulas here. All right. Well, this has gone on painfully long enough. I don't know if anyone stuck through our Bond segment.
Wait. I got to do that shout out that I promised somebody where I was like, I love your tweet. So this guy we follow on Twitter, Doug Millard, he's a comedian stunt double pirate. He has an album called Fart Safari. It looks like air.
He's a stunt double for a pirate, or he's a pirate stunt double, meaning that he finds other stunt double people and knocks them out and drags them away. That's his booty is stunt doubles.
He owns all their stunting.
Yeah, he just stunt. He pirates their stunt work. I don't know.
But he's funny about it because he's a comedian.
Where's Jerry, our stuntman?
Oh shit!
Oh, he couldn't make it. It's me. What's his name again?
Doug Millard.
It's me, Doug Millard. It's me at Doug Millard. Wink. I'll be your stunt pirate today.
Doug, do knock these other stunt doubles out with
Doug's
gonna
immediately
mace.
Unsubscribe and unfollow us like that. Moat.
He's like, I can't deal with you people. You're terrible.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair, Doug. But that's fair.
He's got some good tweets actually. The one that I really liked was, my dog just threw up in front of a bunch of people enjoying ice cream, and it was the best. Because it was. Ooh, yeah. I think about Jar Jar Binks when I lift weights. What are you picturing Jar Jar doing, Doug? Well, is this only when you squat?
Why Jar Jar? Jar Jar does have some muscly looking arms when you see him walking. Is that what he's picturing? Is that he's I'm working to Jar Jar looking muscles?
Do Gungans taste like chicken?
He wants that swimmer's bod, that Gungan swimmer's bod. That's what he's working towards.
They look like they're big ropey frog-like arms. Did they develop him based on a frog? Like a frog's physique? Is he like a sea monkey? Are Gungans sea monkeys?
He's Gungan sea monkey frogman. That's what they are.
who would win in a fight between Jar Jar Binks and Abe from Hellboy?
Well, Abe should win, but Jar Jar has, like, that klutz luck.
Oh, where... yeah. And then somebody hands him a boomer, and you're like, ah, shit.
Never give Jar Jar a boomer. All right, that's it for this one.
Thanks for listening. This has been Our Honest Life with Church and Mercy. If you'd like to know more about us or have any questions or comments, you can find us on Twitter at OurHonestPod or contact us through email at OurHonestLife@gmail.com. Thanks again.